Hello, hello. Welcome, everyone, back for another episode of Mangum Watches. I am your co-host, Lee. I am here with Spencer.
Hey.
And Levi.
Hello.
And BJ rounding out the house. BJ, how are you?
Good. How are you? How's it going?
Good. We got a full house today. This is the second episode of Mangum Watches. We are staying in the same vein, same category, same theme. We're going horror and an obscure horror movie yet again. So, last time it was Megan's Missing. This time we are doing Good Night, Mommy. This is a German movie. It is technically classified as horror. I don't know if I would call it horror, but I got a lot to say about this movie. But before you get going, BJ, anything you want to plug on a sister podcast here on the Mangum Talks podcast channel?
Definitely. We are continuing with our Mangum reads. We are knee deep in what purports to be cozy mysteries of the Agatha Awards. And we are working our way through book four of Harry Potter and pottering around. Been a lot of fun so far.
And on Mangum Talks TV, Spencer and I yammer at each other about television shows. And right now we are doing The Queen's Gambit. It's a lot of fun. Spencer now has a chess ranking, I believe, of 1080. I think you're up to 1080 now. Going to break 2000 here before we round out the rest of the season.
Meteoric rise.
Yeah, he's a big man. He knows all about it. All right, so let's get into this movie. Good Night, Mommy. German movie. I don't know a lot of background on the movie or the director or anything. Spencer, you recommended it. Do you have that?
I can just provide background of where, I don't know if you guys have seen that for subreddits that recommend television shows to watch or movies from a particular genre, because of COVID and because everyone's at home, most people seem like they've mined through a lot of the genres that they like. And now they're kind of scraping the bottom of the barrel or looking for odder recommendations. So, and for horror in particular, a lot of odd foreign films that nobody kind of heard of, are starting to be recommended and starting to spread around. Good Night, Mommy was recommended to Bridget on Reddit of, oh, if you're looking for a horror film, you got to check this one out. Nobody heard of it, but it was so good. I can't believe it's not more popular. It's an Austrian film, it's Austrian-German from 2014. It was their film that they put forward for recommendation for the Foreign Academy Award that year. It did basically nothing at the box office even there, but it's very recently started to get a bit of a word of mouth as being this just really great psychological horror film. So Bridget and I, sight unseen, watched it, had very mixed views about it, but thought it'd be fun to talk about in terms of a recommendation to you guys, just given how obscure horror it is. And it seems like it's a fun genre for us to keep on exploring.
So Levi and I, one of the seminal moments of our friendship is that we one time went to the movie theater and there was a Spider-Man Homecoming, I believe was the film. And Levi and I got up in the middle of it and left. We both decided it was not worth our time. Never regretted it. I think we had some friends who stayed and said the movie was okay. And we were completely out on it. Levi, this one seemed to me like a candidate of a potential walkout. To say it was slow going is a bit of an understatement. It got there eventually, but my God, was this a slow movie. Levi, was this a candidate for a potential walkout for you?
I hear what you're saying. There are extreme elements of truth about how slowly paced it was. But it was so beautifully shot, right? It was a pretty movie. It just looked attractive. Also, as a person who is looking for a home, I was like, well, you get outdoors and you get modern living. That's amazing. That's an amazing
house. That was a gorgeous house.
Nice house for sure.
Watching that the second time, Levi, I actually turned to Bridget and said, that would be Levi's dream house. If he could find that thing, it'd be perfect.
Oh, absolutely. But it was just an attractive sort of beautifully shot movie that had a great scenery, which made up for the fact that from a plot and standpoint, it was very slow going, which I think, upon reflection, it's probably intentional in some sense. One, it's probably some weird Austrian personality thing that we don't have. But I think that plotting nature shows the sort of just the banality of their life. They're sort of going through these motions and not really doing much. And they're not progressing as individuals. I say that intentionally vague because we haven't gotten a plot.
It is very much
go ahead, BJ.
The filmography and how and where it's located and things like that is, to me, very akin to enjoying a book for the prose. And it's well, it's fine, but if the plot sort of doesn't hold up, then it can be frustrating. I may have done in college a couple of times, waited until the last second to do my assignment. So Good Night, Mommy was my good morning.
Actually, this morning, that's funny. I finished watching it this morning. I did the same thing. Like I watched it for about 45 minutes and thought, I cannot get through this movie. And then I Wikipedia'd it and read the plot. And I thought, oh, okay, well, this is going to ramp up. All right. So then I finished watching it. So the movie is about, I'm sure not everybody listening to the pod is going to watch the movie beforehand. The movie is about what appears to be two kids.
Twins
who are in this home. And their mom, or a figure that was supposed to be their mom, is there, and she has a bandaged face. And as the story starts to progress, these twins start to suspect that this person is not their mother. There's a couple of very, I would say, not motherly interactions early on, where the woman's pretty tough with them. She seems to not be talking to one of the twins. She seems to be ignoring one of them, which I think we're meant to believe early on that maybe the twin had done something wrong, or the mom's punishing that twin in some way. And as it progresses, the twins more and more get suspicious that this lady's not their mom. They eventually run out of the house. They go to a priest. A priest takes them back to the home. They get back to the home. Then they get down to business with trying to figure out where their real mom is. And then all fucking hell breaks loose in this movie. That's a loose part of the start of the plot. Where do we want to go from there? I think BJ or Levi's talked about the cinematography, the framing. It is very, very slow, but it is beautifully shot. There's a lot of weird sort of camera angles, far away angles. And I think that part of it, I think, deserves at least a moment for us to talk about. Does anybody have any thoughts on how the film is shot? Some of the camera angles? I think it's pretty Hitchcockian. Any take on that before we really dive into how the plot finishes up?
I think there was a masterful job of not doing a face reveal until like halfway, a little bit more than halfway into the movie. I mean, some of the camera angles.
They lock themselves in the room and then they finally let the mom in and the mom's got the face. Yeah.
Well, yeah. So there's a scene where they sort of creep into her room while she's in the bathroom, and like just the exact placing of the mirrors and like where the camera sort of came over her shoulder had it so that like all the hardware covered her face. And like you could sort of see everything else about her, but not her face. And a lot of shots like that were clearly, we're not going to harp too much about German precision, but I just sort of imagined somebody there with like a protractor and you know, sight lines and you know, laser levels and being like, okay, so you have to stand right here and this is where the shot's going to be. But it was really, I think, masterful in how that was done.
Yeah, it was like obviously most horror movies take from Hitchcock, but like the weird camera angles, seeing characters down a hallway, seeing them through mirrors, seeing the mm-hmm. back of somebody and the front of somebody in a mirror shot, stuff like that Hitchcock did a lot of.
The baby monitor thing was a cool way to do on screen, off screen happenings. Or at least I assume that what it was, or two-way radio or whatever they were using it for.
Yeah, I think the film deserves a fair amount of credit for the amount of craft that went into it in terms of the filmmaking, in terms of the sound design too. Like the example of the baby monitor, the example of when they're wandering through that field that's on fire and you can't actually hear anything other than the background music rather than what the farmer's yelling at them or whatever else. And even, I mean, some of the filmmaking and some of the imagery, it almost gives this film an element of, I don't know if it's surrealism or almost fantasy attached to it. But there are several things that we see in several ways that they're filmed. We almost have to debate whether they're actually happening as we're seeing them, or it's just this through the eyes of a child. Like there's several things that we see that aren't explained, that aren't addressed again, that would be weird to just have next to this house. Like we see several moments of this kid is just wandering through a charnel house, just loaded up piled bones that are in this you know, block that's right near their home. That could be there, or it couldn't. All we ever see it through is the perspective of the child, and the film is content not to explain these things. And the more we get and the more we see, it's really left into a certain amount of doubt whether our point of view, our protagonists, S in parentheses there at the end, are necessarily giving us an accurate impression of events or an accurate impression of what they're seeing, or are we just truly seeing the world through the eyes of a child?
I mean, I think it builds. I'm going to spill the cards here. It builds toward. So I thought this was like a reverse metamorphosis. Like I thought this was like, like what, like, you know, like metamorphosis, you wake up and you're different one day. I thought this was what happens if you wake up and someone near you is different one day. Like, I thought that's what the film was. But then we get these little clues, like you're talking about, Spencer, that maybe the point of view you're getting through this, these kids, is that maybe they're not all there, that maybe something else is going on. Maybe they're kind of seeing some stuff. And then it builds toward the reveal, I think, which is, you know, I don't think there's two twins. I think it's just one. And I think the kid had kind of lost his mind. And he's just, you know, his brother had died or whatever. And he's still, he's viewing them. But I thought it was like reverse, modern day reverse Kafka. And it ended up being like a weird German Sixth Sense.
Where it kind of was.
After a fashion. I mean, a key part of the plot is the uncertainty for about the first 70, 80% of the film as to who's actually in the right here and who should we be viewing as, you know, the good guy, the bad guy, or who should we be trusting or not. Where the film is giving us enough to hang ourselves in either direction about, is this kid just disturbed and, you know, lost and confused, or are his suspicions in some way justified about this figure that has emerged in his home, having not been seemingly present for some time before, and is claiming to be, you know, the mother?
So are we on the same page that the kid was imagining his brother there the whole time? We all agree on that.
I mean, that was kind of stated towards the end. I mean, I guess it's,
I'm establishing a baseline. I'm going to build from that.
So, 99% yes. There was one thing that happened in the movie that calls all that into question. And we will get to it when we get to it.
Well, I think I'm trying to get there now, because I'm trying to figure out, because it plays with reality, right? And then, like, then we build from there. Do we think the mom was the mom? Because I think the mom was the mom. I'm going to go ahead.
I guess
the mom was the mom.
Really early on, I was just like, okay, one of the twins died, and clearly, like, they're just not getting the help for this child that he needs. And then,
you got that early on?
I suspected it early on.
Wow, it really did surprise me. I did not see that one coming. Maybe I'm just dumb. I did not.
No, see that.
And it's not dumb. It's just
don't call yourself dumb there, because I'm usually terrible about this. Like, absolutely horrible. Like, I will watch movies with my girlfriend, or TV shows, and she'll guess the plot points or the next line of things because they're so predictable. And I'm, you know, enraptured in just suspension of disbelief. And like, how did you do that? That's ridiculous. This one I did get the breadcrumbs on of sort of midway through. It was maybe in the first third or around there. But I still was interested by what's coming up next, right? So, like, there's a class of person who'd watch this, figure that out early on, and then say, I'm done. Fair enough if that's you. But it, to me, kept my attention, even though that part was present.
So did not recognize it. I did not have any suspicion at all that this kid might not, that the twins might not, that one of the twins might not be there until the mother was bandaged on the bed.
I know.
And the one kid was taking the knife away, because one kid was going to like saw her feet or something to give her some relief. And the other one was like, what are you doing? And that was when I was like, oh, that kind of seems like devil on the shoulder type thing. That maybe that's the only, and that was like an hour and 15 minutes into it before I got that.
And that was an example of good camera work on their part, just in terms of how that's the moment of when you're really starting to drive in that this is something we want you to ponder and think about in terms of interpreting these events, of where we get the shot very much focused on the kid. We're going from the kid back to the mom. We're going to the kid back to the mom. And then when we're focused on the kid, the camera moves a little bit to the left, and suddenly the brother's there, where he's just kind of emerging onto the scene. It's like, where did he suddenly come from? Why was he not present? Why was she only talking with him? And then suddenly the brother's present, as suddenly of, oh, all right, this is putting a bit of a different framing on the events that I'm now seeing. How do I interpret this going forward?
Spencer, what was the event or scene that made it crystal clear to you that one of the kids was imagining the other?
For me, it was almost just, I think this is, we can discuss the merits of the film being slow at first. I agree with you guys. It was very intentionally slow. I think that was very much pointed on its part, but it was so slow for about the first half. It gave Bridget and me and I time to just ponder. And we're like, okay, some shoe's going to drop in this movie. It's going to go in some direction. That's the nature of this genre. What's it going to be? And we actually had time to talk it out while we're watching the film of what would make sense. what would be you know, the way that this could go that would be a twist to interpret these events. So we actually just had time to start putting the pieces together because the film was giving us that just slow opportunity to do it. And I think that's almost in some ways a flaw of it being so slow, of where it just allowed us to piece together its what little tidbits of foreshadowing it was giving us, because there was nothing else to distract us during those moments. Now, like you discussed Sixth Sense and Shyamalan, part of the reason that reveal can be shocking at the end is that though it's a paced film, it's not, you know, a nonstop action, there's enough constantly coming at you, you don't have enough time to necessarily ponder everything out. Mm-hmm. This one is so slow in terms of its build, which is intentional, it has some merits, but it just allowed us to start connecting together pieces. Like the key thing for us in terms of interpreting events was the utter lack of interaction with the brother. Like even early on in terms of, you know, you can explain enough about the mom saying he knows what he did or you know why, in terms of why he's not feeding him. But one of the first ones that really put it in our heads was that game that they're playing early on when we were interpreting events, whatever else. When you put the card up on the head and you guess who they are. And one brother's interacting with the other brother, but the mom never responds to what that brother says.
Yeah.
And it's only when the main brother repeats it that the mom then responds. And she always acts like she can't. You can interpret it in different ways, like, she's just not hearing, he's whispering, whatever else.
I thought she was mad at that brother.
Yeah, that was the first moment of where we just started, like, okay, let's make a note of that one. And then with just so much slow build afterwards, that tied together the moments to go, okay, this could be a plausible explanation of what's happened.
So for me, it really ties into how I watched the movie, because I found it on, I don't know, Pluto TV or something, and it had commercials.
It's free everywhere.
Right. So it had commercials, which meant that I had like even more time to like sit and be like, all right, well, this is what's going on. And I guess I wasn't committed to the, like, there's only one twin because of other random horrors that I've watched with you guys, and there being a hilariously abusive mother that just like does like a nonsensically abusive mother is a somewhat common trope to some of the movies that have been recommended or that we've watched together. And so it's just like, all right, well, these are the two possibilities that I see, and it's going in one direction.
So I find it interesting you mentioned that you watched it on Pluto TV, because I did see that it was listed there. I watched it last night. Mm-hmm. I saw it listed there in another ad supported app thing. Mm-hmm. It wasn't IMDb TV, but there's a litany of these options.
Yeah, yeah. Sure.
And due to some of the commentary earlier on our text chain about it being slow, I intentionally was like, you know what? I'm just going to rent it from Amazon. I'm just going to pay the $3.99. Like, I'm not going to have ad interrupted slow watch, like a slow movie. That's just not going to happen. And you guys talking about it this way, I can see how that could accentuate the slowness, right? There's not that cliffhanger element of a plot point to really keep you engaged through the commercial break. You're just this long drone of things that you're not interested in.
It's interesting. Go ahead, Luba.
No, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to counterpoint Spencer. First off, I was vigorously head nodding when Spencer was talking. I agreed with a lot of what he said, but he's hit like, you know, because it was slower, maybe you have a little bit more time to think about it. BJ said he even had more time because he was watching it with commercials. Well, I was watching on Pluto TV with commercials, and it was very, very slow for me. But I went the other way. When it gets too slow and when I have breaks, I'm looking at my phone. I'm fucking around with other stuff. Like, so that went the other way for me, where because it was so slow, maybe I gave it less mental energy than I would if there were some things to keep me engaged.
Yeah. I mean, like, it's definitely that way. I was playing on my phone a bit, especially during commercials, and then not coming back as quickly as I might have. But I definitely did experience, it's been a really long time since I've seen a commercial. And it's really weird to experience like bad internet TV ones.
Mm-hmm.
And so that there was a humor in it to like the first one, but unlike regular TV, you really don't get that change in commercials. It's just the same commercial like four times or whatever. And so that was because that was more off-putting. Like I definitely, wasn't as engaged. And I think that the other thing here, Terry, which I think is sort of, well, because I watched it this morning and I had crunch time and like you took breaks. You're like, all right, this is low. Like I'm going to, you know, come back to it. And like, I definitely think that because I'm just sitting and, you know, paying as much attention as I can, maybe not as much as it deserved. I'm just like putting things together because I'm doing it like in one go, basically.
Yeah. That's a good point. If I'd have sat there with it and not just given up multiple times.
Well, I think this film's almost better in terms of discussing key plot points rather than necessarily going through the entire recap, because there's a few key events that the story structural on, and there's a lot of build that gets to those, mm-hmm. rather than like point by point, minute by minute necessarily to do a recap. That, yeah. But yeah. Levi, you were discussing there was the 1%, there's a one scene that casts a certain degree of doubt on the dominant theory that we have that this is indeed what we hear from the mom figure at the end is accurate, that your brother died. This is some form of dissociative identity or whatever else syndrome you're going through, that you've created an imaginary friend of the version of your brother to cope with events. What it cast a certain degree of doubt on that for you?
The brothers or brother who has an hallucination sort of pin down the mom, tie her up, torture her to try to get her to admit that she's not the mother. They asked her key probing details, questions that only the mother would know. And they eventually tie her up and set the house on fire and burn her. As the camera is looking at the house that's on flames, there are firemen that are putting out the fire. And then a woman walks out that looks remarkably like her mom, pauses that's for a second, and then walks out unharmed and unnoticed by people doing activities. Which I saw that, and I was beside my girlfriend, who was on a Zoom call with her friends. And I remember yelling out, "Motherfucker! Okay, you're gonna throw that little hacky thing in there, and now you don't know what actually happened." God, the movie was good until that point to me. Like I enjoyed it, and I saw that and was like, "Okay, now I can just do the reanalysis. I can think about it a little bit more." But ultimately, screw you. That was unfair.
I felt like I was trying. So I was trying to build. Well, I was trying to establish that baseline of like, okay, the brother wasn't real. You know, the mom was the mom. I was trying to build to the mom. Can we all agree the mom did die? Because my take is the mom did die. And what we saw at the end was some sort of artistic representation of like a release from this family, from the pain and like in the afterlife or whatever. I think the mom burned to death. That's my take on the reality of the movie.
I agree. And I also agree with Levi that the end appears entirely extraneous. It didn't seem to have any use or connection to the plot other than just be kind of weird and cast a certain amount of doubt. I don't assign it any credence in terms of actually interpreting any of the events that we saw.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that.
Yeah.
There were just so many scenes that like I want there to be more meaning, and I want there to be reasons behind some of the things that happened. And it's just like, well, this is just insanely weird. In terms of the cockroaches and the cat. Those were like the two things that I'm just like, I don't understand why these are recurring themes. I don't know what's supposed to be going on here. This isn't, I guess, to me, adding to anything other than it's a horror and we need to do things that are creepy.
My read on those was just building in the kid's obsession with death and decay. That, you know, cockroaches are an odd pet to have. Keeping the body of a dead cat around, which you got from apparently a massive charnel house of human bodies that have just been stacked for centuries.
I didn't like that part of it at all.
The dead cat?
Big cat guy over here, yeah. I didn't like that shit at all.
Or even presenting the cat in what later turns out to be a, you know, fish tank full of gasoline. This is a deeply disturbed kid that we've been hearing about early, and it seems to be a heavy obsession with the idea of death and decay, which provide maybe a certain amount of foreshadowing of the way he's coping with the death and loss he's had in his life, at least that's a way to possibly interpret these very odd elements that we see.
So could we say, maybe I'm going to have this take, maybe moral of the movie, just PSA, if your kid has some sort of traumatic event, like get them some help, like taking them just back to the house and saying, I'll deal with it. Probably not a great move. Maybe a little PSA for the, mental health business.
Let's just confirm we're all on the same page as to what the traumatic event is or was, or even several traumatic events, is that it seems, assuming we believe everything that we heard is accurate, that there was an accident, his brother died. It's very at least possible that the surviving twin was at least somewhat at fault for it, maybe. We have enough pointed reassurances from the mom that he wasn't, so that kind of implies maybe he was to a certain degree. And it seems like the dad, unable to cope, has just left the scene as a result.
And the bandages from the mother, was that, are we interpreting that as like injuries from the accident, or the boy was imagining the bandages.
I think she got like a facelift.
Oh yeah, because we saw the pictures later. I got you.
I interpreted it as her finding her own way to try to cope and start fresh. That mm-hmm. in my mind, this happened enough time in the past. Because we even hear the parents talking about the idea of he's got this, you know, imaginary friend in the form of his brother, and how they've been trying to play along with it for seemingly a while. So in some ways, I interpret that as maybe happening even like a year or two in the past, rather than something that happened very recently.
And then, so I'm going to diagnose here. The kid has schizophrenia and Capgras syndrome.
Very good call.
That's what's on Wikipedia.
Capgras syndrome. You cheating bastard.
Capgras syndrome is imagining that your a loved one or a close relative or somebody you see very often has been replaced by an imposter. Apparently, it's not very prevalent, but when it is, there's a big problems that come because a lot of people have killed people when they had Capgras syndrome.
It's a severe condition from what I've heard about. One thing to ask you, we want to talk about, you know, things that just so clearly make this a foreign film in my mind. Is it apparently just a thing in Austria that people just walk in your house and ask for money?
Like, those some nosy motherfuckers.
Like, that was some shit, wasn't it?
They're going to get got. Austria, like.
Lucky that kid didn't get them. Playing with fire.
But I was with you. I was just like, these people, like, these are the most arrogant people in the history of mankind. They walk into someone's house. That's a little weird. Then they stumble on this kid or kids, and then they talk past the kid in like this meta way of you know,
this is a nice house, it's fine.
Exactly. Yeah, right. Like, there's this sort of like the arrogance of not even engaging with the kid as a person who just gave you ostensibly a healthy donation. So like it they were weird. Like, they definitely would have gotten got. It made no sense to my American eyes that no one would walk in who didn't know the people.
And they were fucking around with some kid who was out of his mind.
Yeah, and it's just like, they didn't even just like, you know, walk in the front door and like wait politely at the entrance, which would be weird fucking enough in the US. They start wandering around the house looking for people to ask for money.
Yeah, let me go up to the bedroom. That's a place where you want to stumble on some loved ones. You get a little kinky up there. That's a way to get got. Like, this is ridiculous.
The twins are supposed to be nine. Reading production notes. Me at age nine would still have been perfectly comfortable to tell these people to get the fuck out of my house. It's like, what are you doing here? I don't know you. Stranger danger. Get going.
I knew at nine, we don't have any money for you. I did know that. I'd heard that from my parents many times. We don't have any money for you.
And it's not the only time we see it. Adults are portrayed weird in this movie. It seems consistently that adults are just almost removed from any normal experience of the child. We're seeing a child's perspective on adults and not ever understanding them. Because early on, there's somebody at the door. What I presume is the real twin is, you know, trying to talk to the mom. But the guy, seemingly talking to what we now are accepting is the fake twin, just wanders into the house and starts depositing pizza into their freezer.
Yeah.
So, it was the fake twin at the door. He couldn't have opened the door for him.
That was the scene, by the way, that convinced me that he was a hallucination. Because he goes, you know, hey, Lucas, and then wanders down the stairs, and then it cuts to him talking to the pizza guy. And yeah. I was like, oh, yep, Lucas is real. Like, that's exactly what's going on. But you do raise the next point, which I didn't consider, is by consequence, the guy just let himself in the house and started dropping off those frozen pizzas. Like, he wasn't going to be arsed to wait the 10, 15 minutes it would have taken maybe to get attention of someone.
Yeah, again, more people just wandering in their homes. It's very strange.
But it is like kind of the middle of nowhere. It does have a lot of more of that like smaller town feel. So that might not be as insane as we're reacting to it.
No, it's still insane.
You could have had an agreement. They could have gotten delivery before and they said, hey, this is just a running thing. If you know, the car is here, we're around, we may be out back, just go ahead and let yourself in and put it down. That's possible. But those Red Cross folks, that didn't count.
Weird. I have an Austrian colleague. I will, you know, sit him down on Monday and just be like, what is, like, if you haven't seen this movie, please watch it and tell me, like, what is going on here?
First off, are all the houses that awesome? Second, does everybody just wander in?
Yeah.
From what we hear about the mom, she is some kind of local-ish media personality, celebrity kind of thing, right? Maybe even a national media celebrity to a certain degree.
I slotted her in as like maybe like a local like TV reporter or something, level.
Maybe a host or moderator.
I was going to say either that or like a semi-local game show kind of thing.
Yeah, that's
like
sort of
one
thing.
Of those like cable news. You know, Price is Right for middle Austria.
when she even, I think she even asked during that game they're playing with the cards in the head, what is the name of that game where you write the card, the name on the card?
I assume only Germans play it because I saw it that there and Inglourious Basterds.
Is
and
it like, in the office? I've never played it before. It's in the office though, isn't it?
That it is in the office too, yeah.
So
is it?
I played it. It's a fun game, but I don't know the name of it.
It's the very, like, anyway, there are but, famous scenes that have filtered out into
he writes races on a card.
So yeah. Can we give out awards? Yes. Can we give out awards for like this movie? Like, I want to give out an award for the one, like the biggest fuck up of the film, and I want to put it on the priest.
A priest was another weird adult I was going to mention.
What the fuck was he like? You have this kid that just shows up, clearly ran away, supposed to be 9 years old, and starts talking about my mom is not my mom, and he should have been like sat, like maybe this happened off camera, right? Maybe we didn't get the scene, but he should have sat down with that family with some professional and been
the police.
Yeah,
call we're the done police. An exorcism. Child like services. You know, take him to a hospital. Lean into your Catholicism. Just do an exorcism
of the kid. Take the kid to like a mental health provider or a hospital or something, because that's not like a, hey, my mom made me mad, I ran away. That's like, hey, my mom is not my mom anymore. Like, there's an imposter in my home. Like, that kid clearly had something wrong with him. This priest seems like he did not want to be fucking bothered with the situation and just ran the kid back home.
One thing I'm trying to remember, the guy that the kids are talking to that's running the church isn't the same guy as the priest that later takes them.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. It was some retard that was that was mopping up.
Who did not give a shit either.
Didn't care, but he seemed like he was mentally slow, and so I was I sort of awesome. Counted that up to.
Yeah, it's, and they called some, the priest, and the priest took him home. Yeah,
some simpleton. That's fair.
The most normal adult we meet in this film is the farmer that's yelling at them to get the hell out of his field that he set on fire. That's basically it. Every other adult's kind of weird.
I wanted to bring that up because. My theory about how the other twin died, like, I feel like something fire related had to have happened, because that's such a weird like carry through for so many different things that I sort of wonder if like the field burning was kind of what happened.
Maybe the kid just fucking wigged out on his brother and super glued his mouth shut and burned him alive. Who knows?
I'm with you, BJ. That's the implication, right? Because the penchant for fire, you should know what Lucas is going to do. She freaks out when she finds the lighter. I just can't in my mind envision a realistic scenario where he would have burned his brother and then they would have rebuilt the house or moved somewhere else. Like, it's just this weird,
or not put him in some sort of mental home.
Yeah,
like,
well, the house might be relatively, if he actually burned his brother,
the house looks pretty new. It's,
and
possible
they looked it up on Austrian Zillow.
That's true.
They did.
Yes.
Which was a weird.
Did you get the sense the mom was selling the home? Is that why they looked it up on Zillow?
Okay. Oh, yeah. I was going differently. To me, I was just like, they're trying to look for photos that used to be up in the house.
I thought the mom was selling the home, and I thought that was further evidence in the kid's mind that was not the mom.
Yes.
Yeah. That's how I interpreted it.
Yeah. I guess I interpreted it because they were kept looking for photos. Because there were like missing photos in the photo album on the walls, stuff like that. So that's where I was just like, oh, they're trying to like see where, like what it used to look like when they bought the house or whatever.
I'm
with the dominant narrative, right? There, she's trying to sell the house because there was a traumatic event. She's trying to move on, which is why the burning death, while the most hinted at, doesn't make any sense to me.
I interpreted the burning death
as car, maybe.
For me, I was interpreting based on the events we saw, like the early part of the film, or we see most the kids mostly doing. Is that they're basically, I don't know if this has always been the way that they've lived, but they're kids that are just, the parents allow them to roam a lot, and they go through a lot of really kind of dangerous areas that are around. They go through these seemingly burnt out vaults that are, you know, in the wilderness somewhere. They hop on. I would really recommend people not to do so water infested soil that it's actually spongy.
That, by the way, shit you shouldn't let your kid do.
That scene to me, I rewound it like three times. I was just like, this is so freaky. Like I am horrified at this entire scenario. The sound that it had there, the sound design of that squish, but the earth giving way. That's
weird. But not giving way a lot. Like it was kind of like a dry hardness on top. And mm-hmm. that's where I was just like, oh, is this gonna like, because we have some fantastical scenes, and that to me was like, oh, are we just spiraling off into fantasy at this point? And it was kind of like a, well, no, not really. But like in talking about like how they would play, I feel like they really did a good job of capturing like 9-year-old boys interacting with each other.
Which point for the production, these are two real life twins who were also named Elias and Lucas.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
Schwartz. Yeah. Schwartz.
Like city.
Sorry, you're spot on there, BJ, in terms of the interaction between the two boys. But I thought again the slowness played well, right? Like yeah. imagine like pre-internet or pre-availability of internet, really, you on summer vacation, how much sort of sitting around and sort of boring hijinks you got into, got into trouble because you're just and nothing else to do. So that part to me was part of that theme, but it was just a little too boring by half.
Yeah.
But it did a good job of setting up that just sitting around, it's the summer, you go get into weird stuff and it's not safe, but like you do it.
But you also have the thing where the kid's kind of seeing a lot of shit. So like it's interesting because he is going out, he is exploring, but I do think there's that tinge of like, well, maybe not everything he sees is there.
For me, the thing that rang the most true was them like sitting in that weird chair and burping at each other. It was just so amusingly like these are two kids interacting. Like I don't know if it was scripted or not. It's sort of insane to me that it might have been, but like. There's a lot of stuff that was a little weird, them like hitting each other in the face in the bath. But I actually thought they would be younger than 9 just because of some of the scenes that we had and how they, but like their interactions were like spot on for like young boys being weird with each other.
I don't know. I like this scene with that one scene where they were slapping each other. It seemed to me like they were like going to like ready for battle. Like, okay, it doesn't hurt anymore. Right. Like when she slaps you, it's not going to hurt anymore. Like we've practiced, we know.
Yeah. So when they were like hitting each other, that like for me was kind of spot on. But like when they're in the bathtub with like the washcloth on their hands and they were just like hitting each other in the face.
Playing, yeah.
But yeah.
Question for you about other reveals. If we're agreeing that the mom, however we want to interpret the very, very, very ending, the mom was actually their mom. They were suffering from mm-hmm. Capgras syndrome. This was all a delusion on their part. When was the moment that you were convinced of that? Was there a single moment in the story that convinced you that that was the case? Because I can say one to start us going, but it was the one moment, and I almost consider this an error in the film, that the film broke its rule of everything is seen from the kid's perspective. We only get one moment, I think, in the film where it's just distinctly not seen from the kid's perspective, and it's when the priest drops off the kids and the kids run inside. We get that one moment of where it's the priest talking with the mom, and seeing her interact with another adult that's outside of them. And that was the moment that absolutely confirmed for me. I already had suspicions. That was an episode where she's real. She's actually them. Because and I almost feel like it's a flaw in the film because it's the one that broke the through line of where everything's just seen from the kids and we're sharing their doubts. That was the one moment of where it was suddenly, oh, this is someone else's perspective. This is her just interacting with another person. I see what you're doing now.
So there were some other things that I think it did sort of waffle back and forth, like with the contacts and the birthmark and stuff like that. But some of those just seemed more getting off into weird than trying to play with, you know, what was happening. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like we've, on our other podcast, we've sort of talked about fair mysteries. And, you know, I think that there are times when this is a fair horror and when it's an unfair horror. And there are a lot of what I would say are red herrings for the audience that just narratively don't make as much sense to me.
I would say that for me, the moment where I thought that she was the real mom coincided with when I thought that the one brother wasn't real. Like mm-hmm. those two reveals for me were the one and the same, because what it told me is that
we can't trust him.
The kid's really out of his mind. And like, mm-hmm. when you accept that the kid is like kind of just out there and not seeing things, not seeing reality, then it makes a lot more sense to be paranoid and think that his mom is it his mom? I mean, there were moments like when she busted in without the bandages and kind of looked like the same lady. Like then I was kind of like, well, it's probably, you know, like I'm just kind of thinking to myself, like, well, it's probably the mom then, right? Like, unless he's not seeing her accurately. But yeah, those two reveals for me were kind of, but one and the same. The twin's not real. The mom is real.
Yeah. And I guess the earlier interaction sort of really cemented that this is their mom or his mom. And then something like things start diverging, which is causing, you know, the friction between the kid and his mom, because like it was a very normal, like, here's some whatever that fruit punch is or whatever. Like other things like that were just like, they were having very normal interactions early on. And it wasn't like, you're not my mom. It's just like, I hate you because of how you're treating my brother. And then, you know,
and then it's kind of spiraled into you're not.
His doubts build. It's almost like he doesn't necessarily, he may have those doubts, but they're relatively minor or at the background, or he's only giving them credence at the start of the story. But added on to the other things that, you know, he views as abusive and wrong that she's committing, he starts explaining those by means of you're not my mom.
That's a good point, BJ. His paranoia does build. And I think that's kind of evidence maybe that it was the mom the whole time, right? Like, because he only, at the beginning, there was these normal interactions. Yeah, that was a good point. Yep. Levi, what about you? When did you think that the mom was the mom?
So it was a journey, right? So I'm with you, Terry, in the sense that once I realized the kid is hallucinating, at that point, I'm like, well, the mom's the mom. That's the logical consequence. The thing that threw me for a loop was when they're torturing the mother and she did not know the sort of favorite song of the kid. And then it was only after I finished the movie and started thinking more about it, I was like, well, that implies the consequence of that is that he's been having this delusion long enough that he has stumbled on a new favorite song and he's been interacting with his hallucination, singing that, never expressing that to his mother. That's all been inside of his head, but it's been going on for that long that it's such a distinctively favorite song that she would not know it, which makes it seem even sadder, right? And if the neglect or the hallucination has been building for that long, like super kid neglect, right? You got to get your kid some help there. You can't just play around and hope it'll go away after, you know, by implication, it's been going on for what, a year plus?
That's what I'm saying. That's why this could be interpreted as some sort of like really dark PSA of like, you have to get people help. Like you can't just fucking, take the kid home and be, because, you know, I did get the sense of like the mother was, you didn't get this is kind of indirectly like inference, right? But I did get the sense the mother was kind of saying, no, I'll deal with it. I'll just get my kid home and we'll be okay if I can just get him there. We'll deal with it. She's just trying to handle this on her own, which obviously was a bad idea.
Well, it definitely seems like, but I have right, certain. Go ahead,
yeah, I was going to say there are a couple of things that I guess I wanted to ask you all. Like, when do you think this tragedy happened? Because I think for me that there are indications that it could have been a really long time ago, and it's just, you know, it's been getting progressively worse and people have been dealing with it in different ways. But also I wonder if there is some like outside help, because otherwise why are you videotaping your child saying like he's not going to talk to his brother?
Yeah, it was strange.
I mean, it's one of those things with the mom of where I have a certain measure of sympathy for her just because she's clearly at the end of her rope. She clearly is trying to cope alone, given that, you know, he's lost his son, the dad's basically abandoned the family, or at least is largely such. It seems like he still has some kind of interaction with the kids. And she's just trying to cope on her own. But there's a lot of evidence that she's either extremely neglectful or even maybe, when we see it, several signs of abuse that she's doing. They come from a place of herself being at the end of her rope, but a lot of this plot is driven by the fact that she isn't capable of doing this on her own, but is trying to do so.
Yeah, the slapping of the kid and dragging the kid around. I mean, this we think that happened, right? That she really was doing that stuff, and that that's I mean, child abuse. Like she's abusing the kid. Like, I mean,
she even apologizes for it later.
Yeah. So, okay. Yeah.
So she apologizes for making a video of the kid saying that. And so like, I wonder how much of the actual like abuse occurred. Cause some of those, I don't know. It seems.
That's why I asked the question. Cause we are kind of left like wondering, right?
I think there is some aspects of it that is just like, all right, well, what is actually happening here? Because there's some interactions, like when she sort of could otherwise be interpreted as like cuddling with her child who's having like a terrible like event.
Mm-hmm. And she jumps on him in the bed kind of thing.
Yeah. And it's just like, what is going on there? I mean, I guess it's like if this child was having like a seizure or something like that, you could see like something like that happening, but like, that didn't seem like a, you know, I'm upset. Like the mother is upset with the child or something like that for that to occur. So it was just really hard for me to figure out the things that were actually happening in terms of like, there are some nonsensical things that spiraled out from that.
Well, it also doesn't help that the remind me, Elias is the real brother and Lucas is the
correct.
Several times when we see Elias interact with his mom and it seems like it's kind of okay, Lucas intervenes. The same thing happens in that scene of when the mom jumps on him, is that, you know, mom's jumping on him and she's kind of like just like pushing on him. It's kind of weird. And it's Lucas up top that's freaking the hell out.
Mm-hmm.
So you almost just have to, I mean, the same thing happens when, you know, the big reveal moment that you guys are talking about of when, you know, the camera pans and we suddenly see that Lucas was not there until a moment ago, but now suddenly is. Elias is kind of sort of making up with his mom. He's about to let her go. And Lucas intervenes to stop it. So you almost have to wonder how much this would have been relevant normal interactions if you didn't have Lucas, as Lee described, as the devil on his shoulder, persuading him to both act differently, but possibly even interpret events differently.
Yeah, I think we're more meant to think that there are moments where that other persona that he's seeing is making him or pushing him to do, you know, tough stuff. Like not the big example for me is not, you know, relieving the pressure on the mom's legs in the bed, you know, no, pulling the knife away, telling him not to do that. All right. So let's talk about how we've talked about the plot and we've talked about some of the, you know, beats about how it was filmed. Let's give like an actual review of it. You know, did we like it? Did we not like it?
You recommend it.
I recommend it because I thought it'd be fun to talk about it. It has been fun to talk about.
Agreed.
I didn't particularly enjoy it. I wouldn't say that it was necessarily a very good film for me. It was well filmed. Clearly a lot of craft went into it. And as said here, I'd almost encourage people to watch it just because it comes across as rather unique, but it's not ever going to be a film that I feel the need to rewatch in any sense.
I wish there was a way to watch films on like listening to podcasts at like 1.25, 1.5 speed that doesn't make it super weird.
Every filmmaker in the world right now is angry that everyone said that.
Oh my God, BJ, that is the most non-artistically minded phrased ever say of like, I don't care about your pacing. I don't care about all of your small choices. I don't care about cinematography. Just get this crap done. Like, I want to read Wikipedia
faster.
But there are aspects to it that I appreciate the cinematography, and there are parts of the slowness that I appreciate, but it went on too long for me. And I think that I guess the other thing that I would really have wanted is something like a showrunner where they took pains and care to figure out like what should be revealed when, you know, how that's done. Because as you were saying, Spencer, like when, you know, the priest was there and there were a couple of other things that just, it didn't so much for me, at least, play with the sense of, is it their mom? Is the other child real? It's like, okay, well now they're pulling back from the path that they're going down, or they're making like a slightly different decision, like as the editing's going on or whatever.
All right. So I'm going to force a 1 out of 10, 1 being bad, 10 being great. Spencer, rating 1 out of 10,
4.5, 5.
BJ.
Probably 6.
And Levi, you haven't given your take yet, but take and then in the score.
I enjoyed it. My score would be like a 6.5, 7. But if you hadn't recommended it, Spencer, I would have turned it off within the first 30 minutes.
Yeah.
So I can't give it a 6.5, 7. I've got to point it down because I was forced to watch it in some sense because I, you know, committed to doing this with you guys, which got me through it. It's sort of like eating your greens in terms of a movie. So
I gave you broccoli. Okay,
I'm going to end up around like a 4 because that's the only fair grade I can give because I did really enjoy it. I just would have turned it off. I know it. As much as I wanted to defend the slowness and can appreciate it, I would have turned it off. I know it.
And let's turn this on in a second. But Lee, where would you rank it?
So then? I understand exactly what Levi's saying. I did turn it off. I would have probably stopped watching it on my own. But that to me doesn't necessarily nosedive the rating because it did pick up and it got good. And it's certainly a great movie to roll over in your mind. Think about what was real. What was it? Spencer, you talked about it never wanting to rewatch it. I think it's a very rewatchable movie because when you know the end, then I would want to go back and watch it and look for all the clues of what do we really know when the brother's not real or the mom's real or what's going on. So I would think it's a rewatchable movie. And because it picks up and because it plays with reality in a very interesting way and because of how it's shot, I'm going to give it a 7. I think it's actually pretty good. And this comes from a guy who turned it off 45 minutes away through. But if you can get through it, I'm going to give it a 7.
Well, and two things then from me as we wrap things up. What we got to discuss the slowness, because the film is based around the slowness. We get to the ending based on a hell of a lot of buildup at the start. Is that necessary to where it ends up, or is it in some ways excessive? Is it in some ways just kind of faffing about? Could this film work without that kind of basic, I mean, how long is this film? It's an
hour and 50 minutes or something.
Like that basic hour of slowness to start it off. Could it work without that?
So personally, no, it couldn't. But I will be the first to acknowledge some of this is coming from like an internal place that I've been going to sort of over the past, 3 to 9 months of just like trying to analyze my life and trying to slow myself down because I can see myself getting into phases where like, throughout a work day, I will, be working, get up to go get some water, or, get something to drink. I'm on my phone chatting with a colleague and just always go, go, go. And so the slowness is like this bitter shock to the system, which I appreciate, but that's like, that's all inside my head, right? I can't make an objective assessment there because I want it to be slow to almost force a state change inside of me of focusing on the small things, which is ultimately what this movie's about. It's all about small things and small touches and small details.
I will actually really agree with that, of where this is the kind of film of where I would rate it as a better film that I would rate based on enjoyment. When I give you 4.5, I'm rating you based on what I think, how I personally perceive the film, rather than if I was like rate it artistically. Probably rate it higher artistically rather than from an enjoyment standpoint of where I think the slowness is absolutely necessary. It makes in some ways the ending and the building tension work. It just becomes a bit of a chore to get through to do that, which as you said, Levi, this is in some ways a bit of a bitter pill. It's your castor oil before you go to bed kind of thing, of where I wouldn't, having a certain amount of encouragement, efforts, and recommendation makes for a unique experience that otherwise would be harder to suffer through.
I agree that you need the shots of the kid in the home, the kids running around, the mom, like you need some of that early stuff going on. I just think that like, if you get down into the minutia of the scenes, they could have done a few more things within the scenes, just on the screen, same sort of stuff, general stuff happening, but you could have done some more things to make it visually entertaining during those quote slow moments. I think you just could have done more in the shots. The shots are beautiful, but you could have done more action in the shots during the quote slow periods when you're building things up. So, to your point, Spencer, I agree with Levi. You needed the slowness. It's important. That's kind of the point of the movie. I think they could have done the slow parts a little bit better, which is why I give it a 7 based on kind of like Spencer, what you're talking about. Like I was thinking about more like, how do I rate the movie? Like I'm fucking Siskel and Ebert or something, right? Like I wasn't thinking about my personal enjoyment. I was thinking about like, what do I give the film? I give the film a 7. Couldn't go higher than that though, because some of the early scenes literally where like you have a shot of nothing happening. I mean, you could have something, a rat coming across the hallway, anything to just give you something more visual.
So this is the Tolkien of horror movies.
Oh, shut the fuck up.
It's a very beautiful setting. They're wandering around just doing stuff for like more than half the movie. Absolutely nothing happens. It's a pretty countryside. And then
this takes place in the dark version of the Shire.
I forgot, BJ, that you troll Spencer on Lord of the Rings like Spencer trolls Terry on Star Wars.
In the Game of Thrones. And Spencer hits me on a lot of stuff.
You sort of like it, but there's an element of truth, but there's an element of you just being an asshole to him.
this is fair. BJ, What do you say about the slowness at the start? Would you, and you've framed it in Tolkien, which you never finished, but you did fight your way through this one.
That is true. Tolkien's never been assigned. So,
future, get ready.
Next time on Mangum Watchers.
I've seen the movies. So to be fair, anyway, so, there are parts about the slowness that I really enjoyed because, of how true the characters were. And so you really get a sense of what the character and his imaginary friend essentially are doing for that half of the movie. And so I appreciated that. There were definitely parts that I just found slow and I just didn't understand. Like some of the stuff that they were playing with in the room, I don't have a frame of reference for some of the stuff that they were doing, which was a little bit frustrating and made it feel a little bit slower. So, you know, I think pluses and minuses to the slowness, but I think, I don't think it's the same movie without it. And so, you know, and I think that there are some good aspects to the movie. But for me, the biggest question that I had was, this is labeled as a horror.
That was my next question.
Yeah, great question. And so, you know, the difference between a thriller and a horror and psychological thriller, et cetera, like we can get a little bit more into the weeds. But for you guys, were there any points that you were sort of uncomfortable in the way that you want horror to make you uncomfortable?
No.
Not really?
No. And I don't think it's a horror movie. I think they made it a horror movie because of some of the torture scenes. I think that you had like 4 minutes maybe of the film. I'm just guessing there, but some very small nugget of the film that because they included it, it tripped it right over the edge into horror instead of calling it thriller. Because I would think the vast majority of it is a thriller. Like the super glue at the mouth. I mean, like that, I think you start to move into the horror stuff. And the burning alive, obviously, but I think it's a very good question, BJ, and I think this one really straddles the line. I certainly don't think of it as a typical horror movie. I think it's just enough horror elements that they felt compelled to call it a horror.
It's one of those things I've noticed in the past that whenever somebody refers to a film as a psychological horror, it's because they don't know how to categorize. Or psychological horror seems like that incredibly broad subgenre of where I don't know what this is. Let's just call it psychological horror because it's a lot of mental pondering what's happening and there's some horrific events that occur. It's a difficult film to easily categorize. I mean, some of the events that occur at the end are horrific. They're not pleasant to watch in terms of some of the torture the mom goes through. And if you think about it in retrospect of the experience of the mom throughout all of this, there's definitely an element of a horror story that she endured. But I'd have a hard time calling the overall film a horror. It seems much more in lines of a thriller to me.
It certainly doesn't. Like, remember on the last one with Megan is Missing, all you guys gave it like crap ratings. And I said I liked it because it gave me that feeling. It gave me that like freak out feeling where I had to like I was watching it on my phone. I had to kind of put the phone away. Like, not because I wanted to turn it off, but because I had to stop looking at it. That horror element, this certainly does not give me that at all.
How about you, Liva?
So I just personally chalked it up to horror are psychological thrillers with supernatural shit, right? If there's fantastic or supernatural shit, then it's going to be a horror movie. Even though it by all intents and purposes is just a psychological thriller. But once you add in that element of unreality, that just sort of reclassifies it as a sort of castaway. It's not really that horror based. There are some elements of torture, but the torture is more in the mind in the sense that you don't dwell too much on it. You even, you know, move away to the baby monitor for elements of it. That's not the central part. But it is in a class of movies that I do like, right? That sort of psychological thrillery things. That's my jam. So if this counts as horror, it counts as horror.
I like those too, but I do love that scary horror thing too. Like I like them both, but they are very, very different. Sorry, go ahead.
We do get some elements of, it's a bit of a trend in horror. We do get elements of jump scare kind of ish horror in the early part of the film or in the earlier part of the film to a limited degree.
The
sudden framing on the eye is mild. It happens, but it has an element of tension to it. But the dream the kids have of the mom wandering in the forest is a bit of a more of a hallmark of horror of where, you guys remember that scene of where it's the mom film. They watch the mom, you know, Shining style, as they're standing arm in arm together, as they watch the mom wander off into the woods. And it's filmed entirely from the back. And when the camera pans around to see her face, we get that little, you know, shaky effect that's all the trope in horror nowadays. That is a horror scene, but it's like, there's a few scenes in this film that have elements of horror, but they don't make the overall package horror in my mind.
And that's what I was talking about, where it's just like a little bit to flip it over, where I think because you include those, I think you have to throw the horror label on it because you don't want audiences who are adverse to horror, those horror elements, coming into it not knowing, right? I think sometimes they slap that label on just to warn people, hey, there's some moments of this that are kind of like horror that you need to watch out for.
I think that for me, almost some of those scenes took away from the movie. Yeah. Like I would have preferred not having like them feeding their mom the cockroach and like cutting her open.
Did they actually?
Well, yeah, I don't think they did either one of those.
Yeah,
like I think that those were just, you know, hallucinations or dreams or whatever. Because, you know, I think basically all of the things that happened at night were nightmare dream sequences, essentially. Because, you know, they really weren't based on like things that could happen or were. Anyway, we're reasonable in sort of any way. And also, I think that it would have been more interesting to see a little bit more of the truth that led to those, because there was a clear link between them feeding their mom the cockroach and her like hiding the biscuit and like eating that when they weren't around. And I think that there would have been more of that. And that would have made those scenes interesting to me.
It's an inch in terms of the genre. We talked about this. One could almost, if they want to do this as a thriller or even a mystery thriller, there's a scene that they could have included at the end in terms of just suddenly reframing the film through somebody else's perspective, or suddenly recounting events from a neutral point of view. They could have put this into a different genre. Instead, we get the very, I think it's almost worthy discussing it. It's been right. We've kind of hinted already. The very stylized scene at the end of the mom walking out of the fire in some way, and then reuniting with her children in the fields together, which is harkening back to the beginning. Which is harkening back to
that really beginning. What was that?
That's something we haven't discussed. But the really weird beginning of the kids, of entirely the separate 60s characters, 60s or
70s, whatever, like children's
ish. Thing. I don't choir, know how to describe it. Yeah, it's a
weird,
choir.
Weird,
the ending is very purposefully harkening back to that. I don't know why. I don't know what they want us to get out of that. There's an element of, you know, rebirth through flame that they seem to be doing this, including even the little cinders that seem to be descending over the end credits to kind of style.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. Maybe that's just distinctly an Austrian thing. It would be more for Austrians that actually even grew up with that kind of choir thing. But I did not know what they wanted us to get out of that, just kind of the linking of those two moments throughout the story. I mean, there's an element of, you know, rebirth by fire, of rejoining their mother, maybe even the kids died themselves in the fire, who's to know for sure, and they're, you know, reunited in heaven or some such, but it seemed very intentional that the film wants to link that beginning and the end together, and I don't know what that's supposed to mean to me. Did it mean anything to you guys, or is it just
going over? I just thought it was, you know, the I thought it was as basic as, you know, now that they're dead, the psychological issues have been wiped away. They're together in some sort of afterlife.
So the main thing that I could see this being a little bit more interesting is if this was based on like a weird nursery rhyme type thing that was specific to the country that had that through line, because there was that through line with the movie that the movie that I'm thinking of, which doesn't do a great job of this, but it's the only one that I can think of offhand, which is Along Came a Spider.
Sure.
Which had a little bit of,
just read that book.
How was it? I mean, I only saw the movie, but
it's very good. It's very different.
So
that's where it's just like, it has this little through line where if you have that touchstone, there's a little bit more to it. And so if that had some sort of cultural inference that we just didn't get, that would make a lot more sense to me.
This various moments felt like almost like a dark spin on like a Hansel and Gretel kind of tale,
mm-hmm.
where it felt very fairy tale. It felt very much kids alone.
Yeah,
felt very much the adults are set entirely removed from them, and it's just the kids having to endure a world that they are left alone in the wilderness for. but with just the modern dark spin on it of where, oh, this is a children's fairy tale. They're doing the else. Oh, but let's have an adult lens about what actually occurred over the course of this tale.
If we can get back to what Levi said early on, which was, you know, I think there is an element of, you know, if this was made for an American audience, I'm not quite sure it would have been made the same way.
I don't think it would have worked.
I mean, I just don't think that American audiences, I mean, I'm one of them, right? I turned the damn thing off, would have the patience to sit through it. So maybe there's a cultural element of how it was pulled together, where that maybe that's a little bit more accepted. But I know just as a, you know, American watching American movies, it does stand out as being particularly slow and what I felt like was boring, but I'm not sure it would have been built that way if it was over for us Americans.
Well, two last quick questions from me. Did anybody watch it with their significant other?
Nope.
Not a chance.
Well, I had it on and mine was wandering in and out and then sort of got caught in and like would just stand there for like 10, 15 minutes with just like a I'm confused look and then like walk away when the next commercial came up. So no.
I was watching it and I started recapping it to my significant other and she stopped me. I said, oh, that's enough. I don't need to know anymore.
It well, seemed like the one in particular that Sarah wouldn't like.
Yeah, she stopped me when I was like, the kids started to think that the mom wasn't her, the real mom. She goes, okay, that's all I need to know. So that's all she knows of the story.
I was just like, wait, what are they doing with the cockroaches? And like, why are they putting them in a jar? Like what's going on here? And Brie would just be like, what are you watching? Like, where did this movie go? Like what is going on? It's like, why are they filling the cockroach tank? Like what, this is silly. And she's like, all right, back up. Like what is going on here? But yeah, not entrancing enough.
Leave I had a question. Did the fact that this was in a foreign language or a non-US language or non-English language and you had to read subtitles, did that affect your viewing? I'll answer for me. Most of the time it does affect my viewing. I usually kept me as a general rule need to watch those movies twice just because I'm reading a lot and I'm not always paying attention to what's on the screen. There was so little dialogue here that it wasn't a problem for me.
I agree that this one in particular was not a particular problem for me just because it was a lot of scenes of where it's just, I mean, even the scenes where there are dialogue, the dialogue is kept to a very spare minimum. Nobody describes what's happening. No one goes into extra detail. No one pontificates. It's very much, as your food? Food was good. Okay, go play outside. That's pretty much the summary of a lot of the dialogue interaction between the characters. I would say that in general, we like to watch films while we're eating dinner, and films with subtitles are the worst possible thing while you're trying to eat. If you're trying to, you know, watch a dining movie while you're having to look up at the screen while reading to do it, makes for a rougher experience.
Save those for sandwich night.
Yes.
But do you watch horror like during dinner?
Regularly, yes.
Interesting.
And I'm apparently unique where Bridget and I watched this one together, of where I could tell exactly what her reaction was based on her willingness to discuss it afterwards. Of where the moment this film ended, I looked over at her and she'd immediately gotten on her phone, was just browsing the internet.
She was done.
It's like, okay. It's like, oh, do you want to talk about it? It's like, hey, it was a thing. It's like, okay, I got your read on the film now.
You had the subtitles bother you?
Not really. I don't like them in the sense that I like, you know, the sort of canonically douchey thing to say. I like foreign films because I don't. It's not going to go out of my way to do that. But they don't offend me. I mean, I've consumed a lot of foreign media that it's fine. And I, Spencer, you're quite right. The dialogue is so basic that I almost... The answer is, of course, I needed them, but I almost didn't need them, yeah. Right? In a sense, like, I understand what's going on here. There's not a ton of dialogue plot points that are important. It's about the general ambiance, the setup, the interactions, the acting. All of that told the story in a way that didn't require the dialogue entirely. Although, I mean, of course, some of those scenes with the weird Red Cross folks would have required dialogue, so I've been totally confused by this whole thing.
Sure.
But yeah, no, I'm down with it. Actually, I usually watch movies with subtitles. Like all movies and TV, I usually have subtitles on for everything. I'm
only doing it when we're reviewing it for the pod.
For me, I was driven by it just because I liked to watch anime when I was growing up, and anime dubs are the worst thing known to man. So I just got into a habit of, if there is a dub versus a sub, I would just default towards the subtitles at all times just because I assume the dubs could be terrible.
I will say that the dialogue, to Spencer's point, the dialogue was basic enough that I went into this movie thinking I didn't know a word of German.
You learned a bit.
But I was like, I do know a few German words. Like some of the, you know, like some of them I was like, oh yeah. But it was because, you know, because obviously because the dialogue was so basic, a lot of yes, no stuff.
German also straddles that line too, where every now and then you'll just hear a word and like, that's the same word in English.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like the short words in English are from German and the long words are from the romance languages.
Mm-hmm. Last question for me, then, and we can exit. Would you recommend this to a friend, family member, or significant other?
It'd have to be a very targeted suggestion. A person that I knew is into the psychological horror style genre, I'm not going to just like casually bring it up to someone who like doesn't like watching movies outside of Pixar because they're too scary, or didn't finish the last couple of Harry Potter movies because they're scary to them, right?
Is there somebody you're judging right now? Because it sounds very targeted.
Yes, okay. There are. My girlfriend's brother didn't finish watching the last Harry Potter movies because they're too scary. And this is hilarious from a guy who...
Is he like six?
No, he's like 6'4", former D1 athlete. Just like, I don't know, it was too scary.
What the hell? Okay. I'm going to try to make this like, I'm trying to give an example to simplify my thinking here. Like if I was dealing with somebody who would tell you that Silence of the Lambs is one of their favorite movies of the 90s, fair, probably would recommend this movie to that person. If fair, somebody was to tell you they watched Silence of the Lambs, it was fine, they didn't really like it, Maybe I wouldn't recommend it. So that's kind of my barometer. Along Came a Spider could be another one, although that movie isn't as good as Silence of the Lambs.
That's a lot more action, I think, like in my mind at least. So I think that there are people that enjoy cinematography in movies that I think this is a recommendation just in that aspect. There aren't many people I would recommend this to because most of my other friends are not particularly into horror, but I think the recommendation that I would give is it's an interesting movie and you have to enjoy the slowness in the first half. Because I think knowing about it going in, I think I was more okay with it because we had a sort of interesting text chain of, I've never seen a slower movie in my life. What is wrong with you, Spencer?
I'm so amused that when I sent that message, when Lee, you complained that it's a slow stand film, does it ever pick up? And it's like, no, not really. That was the only one that had watched the film at that point.
I know. And I actually was cursing you as I was watching it. I was like, no, it picks up. Like, what? Well, I don't know why Spencer told me that. Like, I felt like it picked up when they start torturing their fucking mom. That was picking up for me.
But it depends on where, like, because it doesn't pick up for a really long time.
That's fair.
Your last 20 minutes of the film, that's a weird point to suddenly pick up at.
I will agree with that, yep.
I'm curious, we don't need to spend a lot of time on this because we can talk for another 45 minutes about the movie I'm gonna ask about. Terry, did you watch Dunkirk and did you like it?
I did not. I have not seen Dunkirk.
Spencer?
I did.
And you liked it?
I didn't get why some people were talking about, oh, it's incredible, it's whatever else. Like, it's a nice piece of filmmaking, but this is very intentionally slow as dirt.
Yep.
It's a lot of the soldier experience of events.
Nope.
Didn't watch it.
Okay.
Maybe I need to watch it. If you're using that as a barometer film, maybe I need to watch
it. Yeah, it's intentionally slow in a way that I personally liked. It had a little bit more action-y because it's obviously about war. But it just is to me, it's in the same class of like, this is a slow movie. And like, you're in or you're out. There's not... You don't straddle the fence there. You're either okay with that or you're not.
And there are definitely a lot of films that do that. It's a common enough or even old enough genre, like 2001, like The Space Odyssey. Anybody ever watch that? That is very purposely slow because it wants to give you a very authentic feel of what space travel would actually be like. Before, it is a lot of scenes with no dialogue, literally no sound, as people just go from point A to point B because they're going from Earth to Jupiter. Same thing with Dunkirk, where the average experience of a soldier during combat is 99% boredom and 1% sheer terror.
Gravity was like that. George Clooney, Sandra Bullock, where they're just sitting in space.
Yep.
And actually that movie's like kind of like this one, right? Because she also starts hallucinating that George Clooney is there. So, yeah.
And that is the film I give an example of. As a film I give an example of, it where the slow scenes are the best scenes for me in that film. I actually kind of like those moments where it's the two characters just alone with their thoughts going between points.
But I would... I, I would recommend this movie. This would go in my quill of things to recommend when I'm across somebody who, you know, likes a slower movie, likes cinematography, to BJ's point, enjoys that, or really likes, you know, the psychological thrillers like A Silence of the Lambs type thing. It is one I'd recommend, though. I thought it was well done.
Okay. Well.
Do we think it's better than Megan Is Missing?
Yes.
I mean.
It's actually a film.
I mean, tough question.
No, it's not. It's like an A is the answer. They're not even exactly the same thing, right? Like it's such a different type of recommendation.
So I think going forward, we need to talk about Megan Is Missing and the first 40 minutes of Megan Is Missing. The last 20 minutes are just another thing and have nothing to do with the movie in anything we compare between our film watching.
What to do with it?
I'm just saying, this is like, I just went out to a nice steakhouse and you're like, well, how do McDonald's fries compare to this? And it's like, it's a different thing. Like, I'm sorry.
That is a great example because I love McDonald's fries. So I would actually, I'd be throwing them up there with some of the big ones. Yeah, that's a good example of me being ridiculous.
But if the dinner spread for that evening is those two things and only those two things, it makes for a weird table.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I feel like it's a comparison between like, you know, some steak meal and then like McDonald's fries and you know, 5-day old sushi as like the platter that's put in front of you. Damn. And it's just like, well, the fries were fine. They might have been a little cold or a little undersalted, but we're like, I'm not gonna rate the spoiled sushi. Like this is not like a conversation that we're gonna have.
I disagree.
But by the way, Terry, before I'm not gonna let BJ pass through with saying that crap. Undersalted. The man's never had McDonald's fries.
Certainly not undersalted.
It's 0% chance that's ever going to happen.
Okay. This man got every chicken sandwich option that was available. This man could get every fast food fry option to fix this problem.
I've had McDonald's fries and Burger King's fries that like I was trying to go with anyway.
I get like, it. Saying 0% chance those are undersalted. And in
yes, fact, I agree with you. That's fine.
All right. Well, I'll tell you this about this movie. It was fun to talk about. I think it is a great one to talk about. So really good recommendation, Spencer.
Well, I think we've stumbled upon a fun genre to make these Mangum Watches about the lesser known horror.
Yeah.
Does anyone have any suggestions of a not mainstream, lesser known horror that they can recommend for us next time? Or should we just post it for our audiences before the next one comes out?
You guys have already all seen Ravenous. I force you to see that, but we can talk about it.
I'm happy to rewatch it.
Let's do Ravenous.
Ravenous?
Okay. Yes, I like it.
That film is going to stimulate discussion. It's going to be such a fascinating transition from when we first talked about it.
We're going to have like, I can see the audience, right? We're going to have like 10% of our normal listens for Megan Is Missing, 70% for this one, back to 10% for Ravenous. We'll have our next one up to 70% of our normal listeners.
It's like the Rewatchables with Bill Simmons. One for me. It's one for us.
We're doing this one for us. Yeah, let's do Ravenous. I like this. Okay.
Ravenous it is.
All right. Well, this was a lot of fun, folks. Thanks for joining us here on Mangum Watches. We'll be back next time with our review of Ravenous. And if you dare, watch it before we come back for the next episode. See you then.